Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. My guest today is Joe Minicozzi. Joe runs Urban 3, an economic development consulting firm based in Asheville, North Carolina, and he's been an integral part of the effort to revitalize Asheville's downtown. He's also a native of upstate New York. Joe, welcome home and welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Now, your firm was heavily involved in the effort to revitalize downtown Asheville, North Carolina, and there have been, as you well know, many efforts to revitalize downtowns in the upstate New York area, including Syracuse. But let me start with Asheville first to ask you a particular question about that. What particular challenges did Asheville face?
Asheville was saddled with actually the highest debt per capita of the entire United States in the 1920s. So when the Depression hit, we thought we had we had the highest debt per capita. But in addition to that, we thought we had $5 million in the bank. It turned out we had $18,000 in the bank. A little clerical error there. Our entire city council was indicted, and the mayor committed suicide. Asheville in this very, people tend to see Asheville as a liberal place, but it's part of Appalachia. It's very much part of what we're in right now up in upstate New York. It's a very conservative kind of place. So Asheville chose to pay off that debt and not take part of the New Deal program. It took until 1976 for Asheville to pay off their debt.
Wow.
So they couldn't do things that other communities did, like urban renewal and all this other stuff. So flash forward to the 90s, a bunch of people moved in and started rehabbing buildings. They started fixing what was there and essentially rebuilding what was the way that we used to build cities, which was more of out of logic of the historical past of cities. And that brought it back to that Asheville's wealth. So Asheville is now I think Fodder's magazine listed us as the top tourist destination in the entire country. We get 10 million tourists a year. We're only 83,000 people. We've got 75 restaurants downtown, 40 breweries. It's kind of insane.
I want to come back to that particular aspect of Asheville a little bit later, but let me ask you this question first. When in the process of the, I guess it was the 90s that you say, where this really took off, were there particular mindsets or assumptions among the city leaders or the big investors and businesses in the area that needed to be changed, needed to be overcome in order for this to work?
Certainly. There was, there's still people that are politically influential in the community that just don't get the urban environment. They're suburban developers. That's just how they make their bread and butter. You can't get them to change their attitude. They've bought into a model that's essentially an anomaly in the whole scale of human civilization. If you look at what we are as hairless apes operating on a planet, we've been building cities for tens of thousands of years. And it's just if you look at the modern society of suburbia, it's a little flash in the pan for us in our civilization. All of that is propped up with federal highway policies, zoning codes, all of this stuff that are new interventions in the way that we operate cities. And we're just now getting to the effect of what those decisions created. So in Syracuse's example, it wasn't born with I-81 running through it. That was a federal intervention that essentially took the wealth of the city and spread it into the landscape. And it was subsidized. It's a federal subsidy that came in and made that happen. And now you're all having a conversation about, do we redo this? What do we do? Well, you should weigh the cost benefit of that. Certainly you're getting, I don't know if I'm going too far into a sore point here.
No, I-81 was on my list, yeah. So we can have that conversation now. That's fine.
Go ahead.
But
you get folks that are like, I still want to have the ability to drive into downtown Syracuse and be in and out of there in 2 minutes or 5 minutes or whatever. It's like, well, okay, but what's the cost to Syracuse? You're essentially harming a family member, and as Syracuse continues to be harmed, well, guess what? DeWitt, Fayetteville, Clay, your community is going to be harmed too, because this is when you go to visit friends and family in Florida, you don't say you're from Clay. You say you're from Syracuse, right? This is who you are. And it behooves you to understand the whole economic picture and what the transference of that wealth is.
So, all right. So you've brought this up. I mean, we are at this – possibly we're at the end of the decision-making process. I mean, it looks like we may be getting close to the end of the decision-making process. And it's been a long one, going back years of thinking about what to do with this highway. As you say, it runs through the middle of the city. So has your experience looking at Syracuse or your experience in other – areas of the country, Asheville or other places, given you some thoughts about what should be done? I mean, we're at this decision-making point. Where should we go? do you think, from your perspective?
What I recommend in most in pretty much all my cases is that just do the math on what you have, be agnostic about it, and understand where you're creating value and where you're not. So in the case of Destiny Mall, the value per acre of that. So we tend to – our firm tends to specialize in just getting things to a brass tacks productivity level. So when we talk about cars – you and I, could you imagine that we're at a cocktail party? You would think I was crazy if I started arguing with you about my miles per tank that my car gets. Mm. You're like, Joe, come on now. All tanks are different sizes.
Right.
So we actually have a normative way of talking about cars as a miles per gallon, right? Makes sense. That's how we can compare productivity. Well, why don't we do that with real estate?
Hmm.
If we do that with real estate, and all parcels of land are different sizes, if you think that we have a variety of gas tanks, you know, go out and measure a parcel of land. They're all different, mostly. But in the case of downtown Syracuse, you're pulling about $2.8 million of value per acre. So on a per acre productivity level, $2.8 million. And Destiny Mall is only about $360,000. So downtown Syracuse is about 780% more potent than Destiny Mall and property taxes. When you look at the retail tax production, downtown Syracuse is pulling $18.7 million per square mile versus Destiny Mall at $8 million.
Hmm.
So downtown Syracuse is 780% more productive in property taxes and 235% more productive in retail taxes.
And let me just be clear for our listeners here with these numbers that you're citing. You're talking about what's happening now, not projections of what might happen if the downtown were developing.
And more healthy.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, you've got essentially a cancerous ring of surface parking that follows the highway all around downtown Syracuse. And it's that auto-oriented drive in, deposit your car. Your car takes up 250 square foot of space. You know, measure your office. Your office is less than 250 square foot. So why does your car get more space than your office?
Hmm.
You know, we do this. We just accepted this is the way cities are, and it's not. This is an anomaly in the span of time of human civilization, and we're essentially blowing it.
So what should we do? Or at this moment, what are, I mean, there's two options still theoretically on the table here, and one is to lower the highway, create some kind of a boulevard and direct the traffic around. Another one is to have some sort of combination of tunnel and other mechanism to allow through traffic to come through the city but not be so disruptive to the landscape.
I mean,
is
come
the
on
idea.
Now. Can you afford the tunnel?
Well, that's the debate that's going on now.
You know, it's like if you were Boston, maybe. I mean, even Boston was, what, $14 billion? That's ridiculous. But Boston is worth $181 million of taxable value. Or, sorry, $181 billion dollars. Y'all are like $3 billion. You know, it's like – sorry, I just used y'all there. I'm a native
of
upstate New York.
You're from Asheville now.
It's a very efficient word. It packs two words together. It's a rare word in the English language. But, I think that's a thing that Syracuse has to wrestle with. Sure, there's people out at the periphery that are gonna clamor that it's going to affect them. But y'all need to weigh the cost in totality for the whole region of what that benefit's going to be. And I tend to think of it like a big family. You know, you've got one kid that wants to eat ice cream every single night. It's like, well, that's great. Do we all have to eat ice cream every night? Is that going to be good for all of us? You know, it's like, and we understand that's going to be a sacrifice for you to not have ice cream, and that's going to be painful for you. But you know what? It's time to eat the broccoli. You need to figure out what's going to be healthy for this community in the long haul. And you've been through some massive heart attacks since the loss of the Erie Canal.
Yeah.
So upstate New York, it's critical at this point to really be, for lack of a better saying, you have to be adult about this. It's not about the parking space anymore or your ease of commute. We know that this cost of sprawl, we've known this since the 60s, that you can't build your way out of this financially.
I'm Grant Reher, and I'm speaking with Joe Minicozzi, an urban development consultant. So I understand that – I'm going to go back and change the subject to more general topic here – is you have some theories about why city managers, city leaders – often have difficulty in establishing public programs that create more wealth downtown. Could you explain what that problem is that they tend to run into in their thinking?
Yeah, it's funny. It's like I have no degree in political science, so I'm just going to like wade into your territory here.
It's fine. Go ahead.
When we do our work and we start our presentation, oftentimes what I do is I just refer to the dictionary. So the Oxford American Dictionary defines incorporate as to constitute a company, a city, or other organization as a legal corporation. So we're shareholders as citizens inside corporations. So the citizen of Syracuse is a shareholder inside two corporations, the Corporation of Syracuse and the Corporation of Onondaga County. Now, Onondaga County can't go out and annex the next county over. So the land that it has is the land that it has. It behooves the citizen to pay attention to how the economics operate for the choices that we make. The political system has gotten into this. We have conversations more about what we want, what would make us feel good. It'd be nice if I had a 2-minute commute and I could live out at the edge of nature. That's awesome. That'd be great. I'd love to have no neighbors, have a 10-acre plot, and have somebody else pay for my street. Well, I'd also love to be 6 foot tall and have a full head of hair. You know, it's like that would make me happy. I would like to eat lobster every single day. I'd like to have somebody pay for my car payments. Like, what kind of silliness is that? But inside the political realm, we allow those conversations of how we feel we should be operating to take precedence over what we can afford. And so if you think about the downtowns tend to be punished and pummeled with surface parking lots, non-taxable buildings, all of this stuff that this is your most fertile soil of productivity. I mean, you heard what I said. Downtown Syracuse is averaging about $2.7 million of value per acre. Find me one section of Onondaga County that's that potent. So yet downtown only has, what do you all have, like 2,000 or 5,000 residents in all of the downtown zip code? So it has a lot less voters than, let's say, over by over at DeWitt or in Lemoyne area. You know, so we've essentially shuttled our residential population into a suburban environment, and therefore those are the voters, those are the people that ask for things out of the political realm, and the commercial environment has no voting stake. So it's just that's the really weird quirk in our political science process, is that we have a conversation without any skin in the game.
You're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. I'm Grant Reher, and I'm talking with Joe Minicozzi, the head of Urban 3, an urban economic development consulting firm. I wanted to return to Asheville here for a minute, and you mentioned some of these things that I want to touch upon before, but Asheville does seem to enjoy some obvious advantages in any effort that it might have had to improve itself, at least looking at it from today's standpoint. It has, as you mentioned, for a while. It's appeared on many top 10 lists for various desirable qualities. I went back and I found a lot of them. Most of them are related to being in a beautiful natural setting or being an interesting place. Hip is a word I encountered, progressive, desirable retirement location. I know a lot of people want to retire there. It's got a mild and varied climate. And it also has these tourist anchors like the Biltmore Estate right there that help as an attraction. So thinking about Syracuse again, you know, and looking at Asheville from here, it might be hard to think about what would the applications be, because they're so different as animals. And you already talked about the pummeling that Syracuse has taken since the Erie Canal shut down. So how can we make applications between these different kinds of cities? And just to drag this out a little bit further, when this discussion has taken place in Syracuse, there are different many cities that get invoked, Indianapolis, Louisville. You know, it just goes on and on. You think, well, how are these places really like Syracuse?
Well, I'd go back to what are cities, and cities are collections of people. So, you know, like you and I are sitting across the table. We're hairless apes. We walk upright. There's a lot of similarities between us, you know, that we both eat food, we breathe, we sleep, you know, we're people. But if you actually sat us down, there's a lot of differences. I'm a lot shorter than you. I'm missing a lot more hair. I'm maybe more overweight. You know,
I don't think so. We'll let it go there.
I'm Italian. I've got a history of family heart disease. I mean, there's things that you can get into. Cities are the same way. They're collections of people. They have different paths, different trajectories. Syracuse was made by the Erie Canal, the same way my hometown of Rome, New York was. So these are assets that you can leverage. You know, you think about, I often imagine my hometown, if they didn't pave over the Erie Canal and they had a canal going through it. Well, that's Bruges in Europe. You know, it's like these canal towns that have that kind of past. There are precedents to what Syracuse could become. But you have to build off your assets. You know, yes, we've got the Biltmore Estate in Asheville. But But there was a time when our tourism board would not market downtown. And I still travel and run into people. They're like, I love Asheville. The Biltmore Estate is awesome. And I ask them, have you been downtown? And they're like, no.
Hmm.
You know, so it's too easy to discount a place and say, well, that's there. It's so much beautiful there. It's southern. It's got a climate. Well, you know what? You've got the Adirondack Mountains. You're smack dab in between Toronto and New York City. You're a day's drive from what, maybe a third of the United States population. I mean, you've got a lot of assets if you choose to go after them. Or you could look at what you've lost and say, oh, we're not great anymore, and just take this pessimistic, which is maybe quintessential upstate New York attitude, just it's not good here, it snows too much, blah, blah, blah. Well, you know what? You've got a university that is just bringing people from all over the planet here, that is educating people, and you're harvesting brains here. You could leverage that stuff. You know how many cities can say that? Not many. You've got a bigger university presence than Asheville. We've got 2,000 or 3,000 students.
Mm.
You know, so why are you not harvesting this intellectual capital that's growing here, these crops that are growing here? How can you put that in motion? You know, my nieces and nephews, me, when I graduated college from the University of Miami, I wanted to come back to upstate New York. So there's plenty of people that wanted to come back here, that want to be here. So why are you not tapping that? How do you make this place that special place? And again, I go back to history and think of, okay, well, go to Europe, and there are towns that people just visit because of the just being having the ability to walk around them and stuff like that. Does that make sense?
Yes, yes. If you just joined us, you're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media, and my guest is the urban development consultant Joe Minicozzi. Switching perhaps a little bit here, but you've also worked with an advocacy organization called Strong Towns on the sustainability of cities' municipal finances. And that issue has been a big challenge here, too, the sustainability of the city's finances and other cities' finances around the area. Can you speak a little bit to,
sure,
to what you've learned there?
It's kind of funny. I met Chuck Marone at Strong Towns at a conference, and we were stuck on an economics panel together. And for those in the listening audience that have ever attended a conference of economists, it's not exactly the most gripping experience to be stuck on an economics panel. I'm a very visual person. And Chuck was doing this whole presentation on the costs of roads and infrastructure and how he's a civil engineer. So he talks about the fact that there's a useful life of a road. It needs to be replaced after about 40 or 50 years. So in 50 years, you should look around and say, did we squirrel away enough money to pay for the replacement reserve of the road? And no city does that. No city has a replacement reserve account. So what happens in any development, and this could be in Fayetteville or Manlius or wherever you are in the listening audience, is I, as a developer, build a subdivision. I build the roads. I pay for the roads by selling the piece of the road to the house. And then I turn around and donate that infrastructure to the city. And I call it free infrastructure. The politicians see it as free infrastructure. Well, it's not free. It becomes it's a liability that will take 50 years to decay, and then you have to rebuild it. So what cities don't do, and this is if you want to get super nerdy about this, there's a standard of financial policy called the CAFR standard or CFR standards. They put roads in an asset ledger. So we were Chuck and I were doing a project in Lafayette, Louisiana, and we're sitting there having a conversation with the finance officer. And she called roads assets, and Chuck just goes off the deep end. And I held up my computer, and I said, Lori, look, this computer is an asset, right? It depreciates, but at the end of the day, I can sell this computer to you, right? And she goes, yeah. And I said, can you pick your roads up, and can you sell them to Baton Rouge? And she goes, no. And Chuck goes, that's a liability.
Hmm.
And she goes, but our CAFR standards. And we said, we are not going to pay attention to your CAFR standards. That's just a policy. No one's going to show up from the Government Finance Officers Association and give us a demerit point for not modeling this. And we modeled their roads and pipes and stuff like that. And to put it simply, in 1950, they had 34,000 people and 5 feet of pipe per person, 2.4 fire hydrants. In 2015, they've grown their population 350% to 120,000. They've grown their pipe to 50 feet of pipe per person. So they went from 5 feet to 50 feet of pipe per person. their fire hydrants from 2 fire hydrants to 51 fire hydrants. So they've grown their population 350%. They've grown their liability 1,000 and 2,000%. And this isn't a liability that they feel in that first generation. Mm-hmm. It's the pain that their kids and their grandkids feel. And what happens with cities, and all of upstate New York's going through this right now, it's that growth that we went through even though we were losing population. It's like, why would you, if you're losing population, if you're, let's put it in a family perspective. Your kids graduate, they head off to college. You don't go build an addition on your house after your kids left, particularly if your income goes down, right? So we're losing income. The kids are gone. Let's go ahead and add more square footage on the house. That'll build our way out of this problem. And this is what, you know, upstate New York's doing by adding more infrastructure, taking on more liability when we already can't afford the liability that we're carrying because we lost population.
So we've only got a minute or so left. I wanted to ask this final question, but and I think you've hit on it in different ways so far, but you've done a lot of work related to new ways of thinking about the spatial distribution of government revenues and expenses, and you're just talking about that right there. But could you just explain that concept, this idea of spatial distribution of government revenues and expenses?
I mean, it's the really simple way of looking at it is just go out and look at the cost of a mile of pipe. And the mile of pipe does not change if you put one person on it or 50 people on it. The mile of pipe is the cost of a mile of pipe. But if you only put one person on it, it's going to be more expensive for that one person than if you have 50 people on it. So what happens with cities is, like, let's take Syracuse again. It's got miles of roads and pipes and everything else already under it, and you're going and adding more pipes and infrastructure at the periphery. Well, the cost and liability of Syracuse's infrastructure doesn't disappear. It's always going to be there, and it's a matter of time before you have to rebuild it. And so it's just a factor of density. And people in America, we tend to have this really weird religious belief that we're different than the rest of the planet, that this is the American way of doing things. But we've created a financial system that's, you know, Chuck calls it a Ponzi scheme. It works great if you're Florida or Arizona or, you know, but it doesn't work in the case of upstate New York or Buffalo or South Bend, Indiana. There are places that are hemorrhaging their wealth and they're trying to solve it with a pattern of behavior that's just not going to pay for it. In the case of the Sunbelt places, they just haven't had the heart attack that we've had. I'm going to San Antonio, Texas, this week, and it's really funny. They're annexing 85 square miles of new development, and I asked them if they cash flow the analysis of what that future cost and liability is going to be, or are they just looking at it as brand-new taxes? And like, well, we're getting new taxes. I'm like, yeah, for a couple of years, but then you have to pay for the infrastructure. It's like fighting obesity by buying bigger clothes.
That was Joe Minicozzi. Joe, thanks so much for talking with me.
Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO, Conversations in the Public Interest.
The Campbell Conversations, Conversations in the Public Interest, was hosted and produced by Grant Reher, engineered by Tom Fazio, and edited by Jason Smith. Campbell Conversations is a joint production of the Campbell Public Affairs Institute at Syracuse University and WRVO Public Media. To learn more about the program or to hear previous interviews, visit wrvo.org/Campbell Conversations.